Coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, yes, it is indeed Masters Week. I feel like I just said that, but there's absolutely no problem with it.
You did, we've 6 months ago.
We got all the azalea-filled vibes. We're back. We're back at Augusta for the second time in 6 months. Our thoughts on that, everything coming up with the tournament that you need to watch for, plus an interesting win this past weekend in San Antonio that we get to, and some past gas updates and an LPGA major to talk about. We're tuned into some lazy award shows and some rewatches as well. And this week's guest is former PGA Tour player, now making his way, being a swing coach of the pros, talking about Richard Lee, tells cool Tiger Woods stories in Q School, all that coming up. And we finish with baseball in the cold, breaking down DJ's Masters Champions dinner, and much more when we hashtag always end with food. All of it brought to you by our friends at Active Body. And I know the way people are feeling right now. A lot of people are hesitant to even go back into gyms, and people are still working at home and working out at home and trying to stay fit in some way. And Active Body is great because the Active 5 unit is a super easy, compatible, well, with any phone, portable unit that helps you work out really fast from the comfort of your own home. I do 5 to 10 minute workouts, like I've said here on the podcast before, and it's a really simple way for me to just readjust my day, reset, and get that little bit of fitness that I need to keep myself going and give myself the energy that I need. Our promo code is COL for the Active 5 unit. You can get 20% off of your Active 5 unit if you use that promo code COL. So check out activebody.com and the Active 5 unit. Get fit with us and enjoy your Active 5 unit today.
And welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf, Grooved Golf, and Tosi Snacks. I'm Michael, he's Alex, and Alex, it's a tradition unlike any other.
That it is.
The Masters is back. Yes.
The voice is back, too. It's great to hear. It's great to hear your sultry tones there. And that means it's that time of year.
We will get into everything about the Masters being back in its typical April slot in just a couple of minutes. But first, let's wrap up what happened this past weekend at the Valero Texas Open in San Antonio. Alex, I did it. I'm a winner. Jordan Spieth and I are doing our victory lap. We're going around the whole world right now. We did it together. Hook 'em horns. It's there. Big win for both of us. Let's talk about Jordan Spieth because he's the one who took home significantly more money than me.
Yep.
Certainly put in a lot more work to make it happen.
Yeah. Soft golf clap for your 15-1 winner there at NWRINC on Twitter. And I'm at Course of Life One, where we pick these tournaments every week. You finally got on the board, which is good to see. And it was a guy who was the prohibitive favorite in Jordan Spieth. I said before he hopped on, he played at the match play and played very well. He's shown a lot of form. The finishes on the leaderboards have slowly risen as we hit this wonderful time of the year in golf. And sure enough, the week before the Masters, a tournament where he has had the highest of highs and lowest of lows in his career, Jordan Spieth gets his first win in a few years at a very important moment in front of his home fans. It's just one of those easy, like, just how do you not enjoy it stories, because the local kid getting it done when he needed to the most.
Yeah, you know, we saw him play very well over really the entire start of this season in 2021, knocking on the door a lot and then just not really finishing on Sunday. And I was a little worried Sunday morning that he just wasn't going to be able to get it done. Yeah. But he did. He held on. Big win for him. Confidence is going to be riding high moving into Augusta. So we'll see what he can do. You know who I'm not looking forward to seeing how they'll do in Augusta, though? Phil Mickelson.
Oh, yeah. Well, he had a very quick week at San Antonio. Yeah. I think he was barely even there. I don't even think he unpacked in his hotel room by the time plane was heading to Augusta.
Yeah. You know, his priorities were not there, probably. He was just, you know, he usually plays a Valero and he just like plays with things. He puts two drivers in the bag like he did a number of years ago or something like that.
We're thinking he's experimenting. Yes, hopefully he was certainly doing some experimenting on the par 5 18th, Mike. Had a bit of a tin cup moment around the green, continuously hitting a ball back into a hill and back into a water hazard over and over again. I think it was about shot number 3 from the water where he just kind of envisioned the private jet to Augusta on Friday evening. It was like, yeah, it's going to be okay. Everything's all right. I'm heading to my happy place. So yeah, a rough moment there for Phil. Things seem to go a lot better for Spieth and getting that W.
That's okay for Phil. I've said it before, I'll say it again. It's time for him to pack up and leave the PGA Tour and head to the Champions Tour and just rake in the dough. It's time, Phil.
5-6 time. Wins a year. Like easy, real easy too.
Real easy. You're still going to play in the majors. You know, if you got it, you're going to get plenty of sponsor exemptions if you want to go and hit a PGA Tour event here and there. So you can, you know, play in the players, play in the majors, play in a couple others, play Bay Hill, you know, whatever you want to do, and then go out there and play in the majors and just kind of not do anything. And then we're probably talking another 15 years from now, you'll be a ceremonial starter at Augusta. So it'll be good. Your life's, you know, you have a perfectly good record to sit on right now.
Yeah, it's nice to be a 30-year pro and just have status forever. Yeah. You know, like we talk about all different levels of status on this podcast, and Phil's, he's gotten to that legacy status. It's all good.
He really has. Speaking of status, we got to give a shout out to Frederick Lindblom, former guest on this podcast and part of an amazing golf power couple with his girlfriend, Hannah Gregg.
Oh, yes. And they get mentioned in this week's interview as well, too, for a fun little tease, too.
There you go. Frederick, we've been watching him play and trying to get his status on tour. He's doing a lot of mini tours. He earned his Canadian Q school. Great job.
Yeah, good. Great job. I think it's conditional status, which gets him into at least in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 events or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that is huge because we've documented time and time again for the guys who don't have status on any of the main tours. When you're spending out of pocket and you're trying to play these one-off tournaments one at a time, a lot of money goes out and it's very hard for you to get that money to come back in unless you are in the top 5 or 10. You know, he outlined a very interesting video where he finished, you know, in the top 30 in a 130-person tournament and ended up losing money for the week. That's an idea of how difficult it really is to make it on these mini tours without status like he just got. So
he's now has conditional status in the Canadian tour. So we're going to be paying attention to him for sure. Maybe we'll try to get him back on the podcast, you know.
Let's check the schedule too. Let's see where these tournaments are being played. You know, I'm getting towards the summer of travel here. We're all counting down the days and the months right now.
So I just got a couple weeks till I get my second shot here. So, you know,
good stuff.
So it's all good. Let's talk about the ANA Inspiration, the first major of the year over on the LPGA circuit, where at the end of the tournament, the winner and their caddy jumps in to the lake. And Patty, I'm going to butcher her last name here. Patty Tavatanakit.
That's pretty good, Mike.
I think I was pretty close there.
Maybe you say Tavatanakit for a little bit more flow or something like that. But nice job on the first effort.
Close there. Wire to wire win, one stroke shy of beating Dottie Pepper's all-time scoring record. Second rookie ever to win since 1984 when Julie Inkster did it. And she's the first player to ever record her first win on tour at a major.
Nice, great tidbits there. Well, shout out. How about Patty T? We can just go Patty T as well, too. And other fun little tidbit, Patty T, sneaky, the longest driver on the LPGA Tour, averaged 326. I know they're playing on the desert, Mike. They get a few little extra yards, but I don't care. She was averaging 326 yards off the tee all week driving. That's just dominating and finished close to 20 under par with her total there throughout the week. Just unbelievable scoring all week. And gutsy, a 21-year-old rookie, like you said. Yeah. Really impressive.
18 under par, the final score for her. And she held off a 62 on Sunday.
It's not that Lydia
Just lets you know how much of a lead she had going into Sunday. So
I love that tournament. It's out in the California desert. Good to see the Sunday evening finish on the West Coast with the Golf Channel fans. And shout out to Patty T for the W.
And we'll keep an eye on her. Maybe she'll take over from the Korda sisters. One of them finished T3.
Yes.
But keep an eye on it. Let's also talk about the ANWA. You remember this one?
It's everyone's first look at Augusta. How can you not love it?
The Women's Amateur at Augusta. Here's another name we're probably going to butcher.
Oh, no.
Tsubasa Kajitani.
You really put yourself up for a challenge this week, didn't you?
I did. This young Japanese golfer won in a playoff over Emilia. Here we go again. Migliaccio.
It's an international game, Mike, in case you can't tell by now.
Yeah. I know. This 17-year-old Japanese golfer who won in a playoff is the first Japanese player ever to win at Augusta. Another big week for the ANWA, which is really a pretty awesome tournament to have at Augusta. But let's just say that Augusta does a lot of great things, right? So they do the ANWA. Of course, there's the Masters. There's the drive, chip, and putt event.
That was awesome.
Sometimes the par three event. We'll get back to that one eventually. Yep. But I gotta ask the question. Where is the LPGA event at Augusta? Where is it?
This is just sitting right on the tip of everyone's nose, actually.
It is. Why don't we have the LPGA equivalent of the men's Masters? Why don't we have it?
Yeah,
that's what I want to know.
It's time. And we've already, the thing is like, we've been always wondering with Augusta National the past 10, 20, 30 years is like, it's all about breaking down the barriers at Augusta National with the membership and the people in charge. We've already done that with the ANWA. Let's just get the pros there now and just show the professional version of what we're already seeing at the ANWA. This is a home run idea. This has got to be on the tip of a lot of people's nose. I know the LPGA would be pining for the opportunity. So put the sales pitch together if you're at the LPGA offices, because that's absolutely something that's got to happen in the near future.
I mean, I think you're seeing the growth of the game in general on TV. You're seeing the LPGA maybe get a little more interest out there, especially after the lockdown where a lot more people were watching golf. Yeah. So, I mean, come on. Now's the time to take the lead in this Augusta and go ahead and say, we're going to bring the world's best women golfers to Augusta and we're going to let them play. It's time.
Seems very doable. I'm excited to see if that bubbles up a little bit more throughout tournament week as we get going here. The first major for the men, the PGA Tour. Obviously, this is a week that we look forward to so much. It's interesting because we kind of already got a nice buffet in November where we ate a lot of Masters coverage. So it's interesting that we're just 5 months removed now and getting it again. But certainly no complaints here as we're back seeing the azaleas in full bloom in Augusta, Georgia.
Yeah, I've had my azaleas in bloom here in Savannah for a few weeks now. It's full color display, and now we're going to head to Augusta where we're going to see it as well. We saw it at the ANWA, so now we'll see it for this next week. I have to say, we said this 5.5 months ago. It was beautiful in the fall there at Augusta, but there's just something about April in Augusta, Georgia. It's just magical.
Now, I'm not really a huge flower guy. I've never really professed to be a fan of flowers anyway, but I need them this week more than any other week for some reason. I don't know why.
You haven't found that as a homeowner, you've wanted more flowers in your yard?
No, man. It's looking rough in the backyard right now. We'll save those pictures for somebody else. Enjoy the pictures you're seeing all week. It's going to be great to be back at Augusta. Let's talk some headlines and players right now. DJ is defending. We'll get to his menu later. As far as him golfing, he's been in pretty good form.
He's been DJ.
He's top of the list. Yeah. Why would he not be on the leaderboard come weekend time?
The world's best player. How can you not expect him to be in the top five come Sunday?
Yeah, the other one is Brooks Koepka. Let's talk about him, because not only is he giving it a go just 4 or 5 weeks, I think, after surgery, he's been doing intense rehab. He says up to 7 hours a day of rehab for his neck and knee injuries, Mike, and newly engaged as well, too. Put a ring on his girlfriend's finger. A lot going on right now for Brooks. How do you feel about his disposition coming to a place where he has had some success in recent years?
He's got a lot going on in his head there and a lot going on with his body. I'm curious if he'll make the cut.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just like, I would like to believe that he could just storm back and be in contention and everything could be cool. We just quite haven't seen that from him in these returns from these injuries. We've seen him slowly get better and then have that pop week about 3 or 4 starts back from an injury. I just don't know if he's going to be able to return to immediate form at a venue that just demands so much.
Right. Yeah. And same thing with John Rahm. Baby came just in time so he could play at Augusta. Congrats to Rahm and his wife. But same thing. There's a lot going on in your head. Are you going to be able to stay focused at Augusta? And is it even right for you to stay focused at Augusta when you have a newborn now?
New dad alert. I don't know how that can either go one of two ways. It's either like he doesn't even like feel really there and doesn't feel up for the competition and just misses the cut, or he is invigorated and relaxed and the birth went well and he's excited to have a kid in his life and he's playing free flowing and thinking about nothing and plays the week of his life. So it could go one of either two ways on that spectrum. I'll be watching out for Rom. Obviously, you know, JT hasn't really put himself in a lot of green jacket mixes before, but he's playing good golf as well. I don't know. Any thoughts on Rory right now? You seem to be very kind of bullish on Rory at this point.
I'm like, you know, I really love that Rory came out a couple weeks ago and said that he probably did the wrong thing with his game to go after the Bryson approach and go for speed and distance in the swing. And that he's seen that really hurting his game. And he's probably going to back off of that. So now you got to wonder if he's going to start retooling his swing now for that. Can he go into Augusta in the middle of potential swing changes and still play to win? He could contend. I just don't know, when push comes to shove, you're probably going to fall back into old habits, and that's going to be the problem, right? So
yeah,
I'm not putting a dollar down on Rory. Part of me wants to, because you just never know with guys at Augusta, guys who just play horribly all season come into Augusta and they play great. You know, you see that, saw it with Tiger Woods every year, even when he was playing horribly, he'd come into Augusta and you just see him all of a sudden toward the top of the leaderboard. So
yeah,
I don't know.
A little bullish on Rory, and the final name in that group of favorites to touch on is Bryson. I didn't see what I wanted to see out of him in terms of aggression and comfortability with the driver at the match play a couple weeks ago when I watched him. He did not make it to the weekend. I'm going to keep him off just because this is a course that's not really going to allow for a lot of his lines. The trees are so god dang tall around the corner. They completely discourage a lot of the lines Bryson would like to take on a typical PGA Tour venue. So I'm keeping him off as well. I don't know. There's a lot of different ways you'd go with these picks. Any other thoughts of guys that you like to mention you might see in the fold this week?
I think you got to say Colin Morikawa, right?
I fell in love with him and he didn't make the weekend. So
I know, but it's still like he's become one of those names you just expect to see at the top of the leaderboard every single week now. So I'm certainly thinking him. You certainly got to think. You said JT, same thing with like Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay, these names that are just always toward the top. Someone we haven't talked about as much this season, and maybe he can reclaim, maybe he can finally win again. He did win this year, right? Webb Simpson.
Yes. I mean, another kind of ball striker that has history of being on the leaderboard at Augusta. He's on that list of like 8 to 10 guys where like you just won't be surprised at all to see him near the top of the leaderboard on Saturday morning.
Yeah.
You know, Schauffele's on that list. Cantlay's on that list. Francesco Molinari's on that list. Tony Finau is on that list. Even though Finau's not a winner, he'll be hanging around the leaderboard if you're looking for someone in the top 5 or 10. A lot of attractive names there on that list, but the cream does tend to rise at the top at Augusta, which is why we're kind of focusing on that first crop of names.
Right.
It's going to be exciting to see who gets it done.
So if you got to pick a sleeper, I'm going to throw a name out there for a sleeper, because there's always one that just kind of sneaks up there for a little bit on Thursday or Friday. So I'm going to pick one that's pretty far down there on the list. Someone we didn't talk about before we started recording. Zach Johnson. Former winner. Now, the only thing going against him here is the weather is going to be beautiful. So
he does like the win and the slop. You're right. He does. Yeah. That's a good name. That's a veteran who hasn't been on a leaderboard in a while, but he plays the course well. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with a name just to burst out the scene on Thursday or Friday, who I maybe really don't even like to win the tournament, but he'll make his presence felt just because he's done that a lot recently. Scottie Scheffler. 55-1 to win the tournament, Mike. I could totally see him leading on Thursday night with a hot early round. Again, don't know if I like him for the full week, but if you're looking to bet something like that, he's a guy to watch as well, too. The list is deep. I'll always be flirting with Tommy Fleetwood, my guy. And I'm addicted to throwing a dollar on him. You can check out our full cards again. I'm at Course of Life 1 on Twitter. You're at MWRINC. We've got, 48, 50-something hours of live coverage on Masters.com and on TV between all the streams. I know you love getting into multiple streams this week. It's a great opportunity to take advantage of some web watching, too, if you're into that for golf fans.
Yeah, it's one of those tournaments. You just, you know, you sit down on your break at work, post out your phone, you log on to Masters, get on the app, you watch whatever you want to watch. It's great.
Great.
Fantastic. Holes
15 and 16, the Amen Corner stream. They're adding a stream for holes 4 through 6, which is a fun little stretch as well, too, plus featured groups on the range, all that good stuff. So, again, it is Masters week. We're here, excited to be back again. No, it's not too soon. It feels too soon, but it's not too soon. Give it all to me this week. And I'll preview maybe even a menu item. I might. We'll talk a little later about that as well too for my master's preparation. Yeah.
We'll get into it all. Let's change gears and switch over to Tuned In with what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports. It was another award weekend, Alex, right?
just barely, yeah. As I would say. So we're getting pretty late into the pandemic, fortunately, which is great to say. We haven't been able to say that for a long time, but we've done a lot of virtually presented award shows in the last several months. Some have been good, some have been okay, some haven't been great. We're starting to get real lazy at this point, Mike. The Screen Actors Guild, aka the SAG Awards, was on Sunday night. It was trimmed down to a 1 hour televised program. No real host or anything that you kicked it back to at any point. And they were just running through award shows left and right, award presentations left and right. I just think we're at that point where we're really ready to just all see each other and have these events again. People are getting real lazy with the award shows.
Yeah. Here, the other problem, though, I got to say, is that people don't watch award shows anymore. They're just not being watched.
Yeah, so I think this season hurt it kind of doubly too. When realizing you're not going to get like the vibes of the red carpet and see the celebs in the audience, and there is something missing from that broadcast. Some award shows have kind of tried to bring it in their own way, putting cameras in these celebrities' houses, but it's getting lazy on the award show circuit right now. I know we got the Academy Awards in a few weeks. I'm curious to see how that all works. I feel like there'll be some form of a live host and presentation there, but we're a couple weeks away from that.
Yeah, we'll definitely see what happens.
Yeah. What are you up to? What are you doing to do?
I'm not watching award shows. When my wife and I watch TV now at this point, we got to find some that we both enjoy together, which is a little difficult with kind of what we both like. So now we're just kind of rewatching Chuck together.
Classic NBC comedy.
Classic. Yeah.
Zachary Levi, correct?
Exactly. Okay. Yes. And what's her name? Yvonne Strahovski or something, I think.
Yeah. She's now on the Handmaid's Tale. Really going for it this week. Impressive.
It's, you know... You need me to pronounce people's names. Drop me a DM. I'll send you my rate.
How old out is, let's really date ourselves. How long has Chuck been off the air at this point? It's been a few years, hasn't it?
Oh, I think a few years is an understatement.
Oh no.
I believe the show was on before we were in college.
Yeah, it was. We're going back to the mid 2000s for that. Good time capsule, at least a decade. Shout out to Chuck, a memory from our past. Good stuff.
Let's get into this week's guest. Alex, we've got a former PGA Tour pro in Richard Lee, who spent several years on tour. He's now focusing on his career in instruction in Arizona for a growing stable of professionals. And he even played a fun little match against two past guests as well.
That's right. Yeah. So he did. This is where I first found him and got reconnected to him. I remember seeing Richard on tour big time, but found him on social media because he did a little 2-on-2. It was him and Kyung Kim from the LPGA Tour against Hannah Gregg and Frederick Lindblom. They had a fun little match they documented on social. We ask about that and the potential rematch as well, plus a really fun Tiger story, all about what he's doing with his teaching and a whole lot more. It's a good conversation.
It's going to be great. But first, as always, we want to let you know that this interview is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and makers of the Phone Caddy. The Desert Fox team is based in Arizona, so they know golf, and the Phone Caddy is crafted by both golfers and engineers. The Phone Caddy is unique because it mounts right onto your golf cart in seconds in a place where you can actually see and use your phone. You can keep your yardage and scoring apps at your fingertips, change music, answer calls and texts, and more, all with the Phone Caddy from Desert Fox. It's the most functional way to keep your phone safe and ready on the course at all times. The Phone Caddy works seamlessly with almost any phone model and quickly becomes the talk of your foursome. For our listeners, you can save 10% off your purchase of a Phone Caddy with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. It comes in a range of colors, and you can even show your support with their patriotic line. So head on over to desertfoxgolf.com to get your Phone Caddy, and don't forget to use the promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10%. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE at desertfoxgolf.com.
Next up on the tee from Arizona, we've got a pro golfer that spent years on the PGA Tour and is now an instructor out at McDowell Mountain Golf Club out in the desert of Arizona. Beautiful area there. It's Richard Lee joining the Course of Life. Richard, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the show and looking forward to chatting with you.
Absolutely. I know you're a busy guy. You were just working the soccer practice with the kids and you're here hopping on to talk some golf with us now. So I appreciate you taking the time. Let's just first start kind of with everything that's gone on with everyone in the world in the past year. Obviously, kind of our world got flipped a little bit upside down. I know you're kind of just getting into the teaching aspect of the game, but with balancing family and life and everything going on, just kind of how's the last year been for yourself? The wife and the kids?
Oh yeah, I mean, man, like you said, it's been a lot of adjusting, right? And so at the beginning of 2020 is when I jumped into a different career path, you know, going from playing to coaching. And I think about 2020, I think March is when it really kind of hit us, right, with kind of all the
regulations. just as you were getting going with a new venture, right?
Right. Exactly. So, you know, like I knew like the first month of growing the business, the second month it was slowly growing, right? Because I, you know, I didn't do a whole lot of advertising. It was just more of through my social media and word of mouth. And right before COVID kind of hit, you know, my business side of coaching, the trajectory was, you know, on an upward trend. And obviously COVID kind of put a damper to that, like with a lot of people in the world. But, you know, I think golf was one of those sports, and especially in Arizona, it never really got shut down. It was actually one of those things that one of the few things that everyone was able to do.
Yeah.
Being outside. And so my business actually really didn't get affected a whole lot.
It's good.
And it's been a journey. I'm still learning, you know, the coaching side of it. I think there's a different aspect that I have from playing at the high level. And, but there's also, I believe there's art of coaching, right? Like when to say what, and how do I deal with player A and player B, and learning the differences between a visual learner, a verbal learner. Everyone's so different. So I'm still learning that. But yeah, it's been a whirlwind to this point. I've been able to, you know, be part of some high level junior golfers to teaching beginner golfers to players on the PGA Tour and LPGA Tour. So it's been a mixture of a lot, but and this journey has been just interesting, and I've enjoyed it. Yes, this is challenging at times. Yes, I do miss competitive golf, but to where my career is now, it's been a good transition. And the part that I really, really have enjoyed the most is being with my family. Like you mentioned earlier in the show, I do have two kids. I have a 14-year-old and a 7-year-old girl who, you know, being on the road, played professional golf for 10 years, which isn't a long time, but I was out on the road a lot. And I don't miss the traveling aspect of it. So the last year and a half or so has been a good transition in a lot of ways, a lot of positives from this as well.
I like that. And you've got a lot of experience with the family as well, too. Something that's very unique that I found out about yourself is you had a great career as a Husky at UW. So shout out to the Huskies. But you've been kind of juggling life as not only a married man, but family as well for a long time, kind of dating back to your collegiate career. How did you learn to kind of juggle all of those things at such a young age?
Yeah, you know, I definitely had a lot of help, but yeah, I always say I didn't have a normal route, right? To
yes.
A college route. Cause I was married at 19. I had a kid when I was 20. So, you know, I learned a lot about time management.
I bet. Yeah.
We have family members that helped us quite a bit. And it taught me to be really, really good with, or have good priorities, right? Or have priorities that I know what's important. But I mean, honestly, if I'm looking back, it was all blur.
Yes, you know, I bet.
It was just a lot going on, and a lot's happened. And looking back, it was tough at times, because I literally remember, like, you know, waking up at early in the morning, having team workouts and then classes, practice, and then juggling family and kid. And yeah, I looking back, I'm like, how did I do it? I don't know.
Yeah. Well, usually when I talk to my buddies who are fathers as well too, and they get to the first tee, they have a hard time remembering what day it is. So I'm impressed that you were able to do what you were at such a young age. It's really cool. And so from college there, you got out into the professional circuit. You just missed out on your tour card, but a really cool opportunity came to you, obviously because of the status that you were able to obtain as a young pro on what we now know as the Korn Ferry Tour. It was the nationwide tour. We've had a lot of different guests on who go through that tour, and I'm graduated as well too.
Yeah.
Talk to me about what that year specifically did on the Korn Ferry Tour for you to help get your game to the next level so you could rebound at the next Q school.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I had a heartbreaking moment there, because I ended up bogeying my 15th and 16th hole, my last day to miss out on my PGA Tour card by one shot. But I always say that was probably a blessing in disguise, because the nationwide tour back then, right, the Korn Ferry Tour now, it taught me how to travel. It taught me how to play that many events in a year, which, you know, in college, we maybe play 10, 12 events a year at most. And they're all spaced out, right? And we're told to, hey, show up here. We're going on a flight. We're going to this tournament. Great. Coaches take care of that. All we have to do is just show up. But, you know, the tour life, you are on your own. Like, you have to pick the schedule and learning how to play different types of courses and figuring out the scheduling aspect of it. Okay, what's best for me? Like, okay, how many weeks in a row is ideal for me? Like, I had no idea. No, like I didn't know my mental capacity of playing 4 weeks in a row, 5 weeks in a row, or like, I don't know what's too much and what's too little. Like, it taught me how to travel. It taught me how to get the best out of my game. And it taught me how to just be a pro in a lot of aspects of taking care of the little things. And yes, I always say, yeah, of course, at the end of the day, we're golfers and we're playing golf, but there's other things that you have to juggle and manage, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, sponsors obligations, which, you know, the nationwide tour, there isn't a whole lot of that, but like being able to have the business side of it. But at the same time, learning how to say no at times, right? And learning that sometimes it's okay to say no, because that was the hardest thing for me in the beginning, because I hate saying no to people.
I'm curious with your schedule. Did you prefer as like a guy who had all these obligations and being a dad and a husband as well, did you find that you enjoyed, say, maybe playing like just 2 or 3 weeks in a row and then coming home for a week for the family and then getting back on the road? Or did you prefer maybe going out on an extended stint, you know, playing 4, 5, 6 weeks in a row and then coming back home for a couple weeks or more extended period of time? How did you like to formulate your schedule?
Yeah, you know, hindsight's always 20/20, right? So for me, my rookie year my first year as a pro, like I had no idea what was best for me, honestly. But after that year, I was able to learn that if I play more than 3-4 events, I'm mentally fried. Like, I get more irritable.
Yeah.
I make dumb bogeys and I, you know, so it was like, and I miss my family. And back then, you know, playing on the nationwide tour, like you're not making enough money to be able to fly out your family and be traveling with 3 people instead of 1. You're minimizing costs at all. So like, yeah, I was away a lot, and I just knew, for me, hindsight, 3 in a row is probably the max I will go. And back then it was just kind of like, all right, I got to plan everything that I get into, because I felt like I had to get up on my list. You have all these to-do lists, right? To get on the top 75, top 25. You're always chasing. And it really is. I learned that through the hard way of, okay, like, I'll rather have 3 good events versus 7 mediocre events, because, you know, you make more money after 3 good events rather than having make 6 out of the 7 cuts but finish 30th, 40th.
Exactly.
You'd rather have three events where you have a top 5 and a miscut and a top 10. Like, you make more money, more points that way. So it's like trying to make it efficient as possible. So for me, 3 weeks is kind of like my maximum to where I feel like I can compete and have a fresh mindset. It's really not necessarily the physical aspect, it's more the mental aspect.
Right.
So yeah.
No, I like that. That's good. Good perspective indeed. Let's talk about that bounce back I mentioned, which was the crazy finish at the 2011 Q School. I want you to walk people through that, because from what I was reading, you finished with a handful of birdies, to get your card in 2011, did you know exactly where you stood and what you had to do in that finish, or was that all just kind of going for it in the end?
Yeah. So, you know, I always say, you know, back then when we had six rounds, right?
And six rounds. Yeah.
The bottom half, so technically the people that are not in contention, quote unquote, play the opposite course. And I was on that opposite course on the final 2 days.
Oh, man. All the rotation. Quite a direct message there to you.
Yeah, right. So, you know, I used to call it the loser bracket.
Yeah.
But like going off of like, you know, it was one of those weeks where, you know, I was just kind of hanging around. Nothing was really like, I wasn't playing great. I wasn't playing bad. And like going to the last day, I just knew like I needed a really good round, right? And then the round, it was just one of those rounds where I just kind of stayed in it. Like I remember I was like one over after 12 holes. I remember like, one over after 13 holes. I made like one bogey and like 12 pars. Like one of those rounds where it was just kind of like, man, just not getting anything going, right? And I was finishing on the front nine of the stadium course where they just had the tournament, the American Express. So I was finishing on hole 5 to 9. And I remember that par 5-5 is a very risk-reward hole where you got water left for the tee shot and water right on the second shot. And I just remember, like, you know, I'm just kind of like at the point where I'm not trying to like go for broke. I'm just still trying to play steady golf. I'm not trying to go out of my way to like saying, oh, I need to make this happen. I was just still trying to play golf. And I hit two shots. I end up making like a eagle putt. And I'm like, okay, I got to red numbers. But at that time, I still know, like, I'm still probably like not quite there. Like I know there's not many leaderboards out there, especially in the loser bracket.
Yes.
So like, I'm like, okay, it's all right. But it's something positive. So I got some momentum going. And the following hole is like the sixth hole. I don't know if you know that hole, the very tough par three. They put the pin in the front and it was, I remember it was like downwind. I hit like a tee wasn't all the way back. So, but it was still a long shot where you really couldn't get it close because the front pin downwind, I mean, shorts water, so no one's gonna go for that. And I hit a 6-iron. I hit about a 40-footer. The ironic thing about that hole is like our group got on the clock, and the rules official comes up to us like, "Hey guys, you guys gotta speed it up." And you know, it's Q school, last day of Q school, and we're all grinding, right? It's like, and I remember feeling rushed, but I end up making that 40-footer. I'm like, "Oh, okay." Like,
wow.
I just went eagle birdie. And then I kind of knew, I was sensing because the camera crew showed up 3 holes to go. I'm like, okay, so like, and they're following me. And they're obviously, I'm thinking, okay, now I got to be pretty close, whether I'm either one, I'm thinking I'm still on the wrong side, but I'm close. And I end up parring the next hole. So I got 2 holes to go. Number 8's a par 5. I hit 2 great shots just off the green. Past the hole, get up and down for birdie. I'm like, okay, now I got to be really close. The camera's on me every shot from that point on. And then the last hole, number 9, not an easy hole. And even to that point, I really didn't know where I stood playing the last hole.
You didn't?
Okay. I had a great drive. Yeah, I had no idea. But I knew I was close. And I hit a really good second shot to about 6 feet. So I tuck right pin, and I'm like, wow, I hit another great shot. And that moment, you know, the funniest thing was I wasn't nervous at all. I was probably people talk about the zone, or you know, I was at peace in a weird way. And I remember hitting that second shot, and did I know I had to make the putt? No, but I was thinking it'll probably help if I made the putt, you know. And it was like a 6-footer, maybe 6-7-footer. And it was one of those putts, you know, like I honestly didn't know which way it was going to break. It was just kind of one of those. But in a weird way, I just knew, like, if I hit the putt solid, I just knew I was going to make it. It was just one of those weird, you know, whether it's divine intervention or, you know, what is meant to happen, it's happened. I'm a big believer in that, you know.
Love
and,
that.
And for me, it was kind of like I hit the putt. Obviously went in the hole. Even when I made a putt, like there's some footages out there where I was looking at my family, I giving them like, I don't know, is it good enough or whatnot? And they gave me a thumbs up, and that's when I knew like I made it. And that going from crumbling the year before, missing out by one, to making it by one in that dramatic fashion to have your dream come true. It was one of the most rewarding moments of my career, even to this point. And that was, yes, it's probably the most, technically looking from the outside in, one of the most pressure-packed situations. And don't get me wrong, I was nervous the whole week. It's Q school, six rounds, and you're mentally tired and physically tiring. But in those five holes, probably the most amount of peace I've ever had on a golf course.
Interesting.
In a weird way.
I love that you say that. And that, it's cool how much value you put on the Q school, and it got you. I mean, that was the that plateaued you to the PGA Tour. It's a lifelong dream of so many guys who are out there participating in that Q school, all three stages too. So awesome to hear that story of rebounding from last year in 2010 as well. So
right.
You get to the tour, you've had a couple top five finishes on tour as well in your years on tour. But one really cool highlight I want you to talk about is playing with Tiger Woods at a course that I know very well. I grew up in the Boston, Massachusetts area, so I spent many years going to the former Deutsche Bank tournament at TPC Boston. And I know you have some really cool memories of a day specifically playing with Tiger at that course and just the roar and just the energy surrounding that pairing.
Yeah, man, you did some research. I like it. We get our tee times, through text messages the night before, right? And I knew when we were looking at our leaderboard, yes. I'm like, oh, damn, right next to Tiger Woods. I'm like, I have a chance to play with the GOAT. And I got that text message and I was just over the moon, because Tiger was my golfing idol growing up, like a lot of people. And man, I was so ecstatic to be there. And we're in the wrong, again, the loser bracket, teeing off 10 on a Sunday is never a good thing.
Yes, right.
But, we...
It probably didn't feel like it, though, based on what I know about that tournament, that course. It probably felt like a Saturday afternoon in the final pairing.
Oh, yeah. I showed up on 10th tee and it was like 60 both sides. I was like, wow, like this is what it's like to play with Tiger. Yes. After that Q school moment, probably my second most proud moment playing with Tiger, not many people can say I play with Tiger, right? And I was able to experience that. Another cool thing was the third member of our group was Ryan Moore, who I look up to, another Washington native golfer.
That's right, yeah.
We're friends, and I know Ryan not really well, but I know him pretty well. And like, it was such a good pairing. And I still remember to this day, that first hole, like we all had good drives. And I think a Tiger hit first and he like stuffs it to like a foot. Like people go crazy. Like, whoa, like what a shot. I'm like, man, that was cool. And I had like pitching wedge in my hand. I'm like, okay, I'm going to hit this nice and tight. And the pin was like back left. I flared this pitching wedge to the middle of the green to like 40 feet. I'm like, oh man, that was not a good shot. And
so many people watching too.
It to like a foot. Right. And then the cool thing was I drained that 40 footer on that first hole.
Awesome.
After like hitting it the middle. And I'm like, people cheer. I'm like, and Tiger goes, hey, good putt. I'm like, oh, sweet. like that was such a cool moment.
Man.
And like, cool thing was another, and Tiger was great to play with, honestly. Like, he's a Stanford grad and I'm a Husky University grad. And like, that's the year when my football team was absolutely horrible, right? And like Tiger just kept talking about, man, you're basically giving it to me. Like, your football team's awful. Like, you guys haven't won a game this year. And talking about sports, right? And this, and another cool story is like, I forgot which hole it was. Maybe it was hole three, the par three, I believe. And it was playing long. It was like a 210. Back then, I had a 7-wood in my bag, right? And like, not many people play a 7-wood. And Tiger hits this iron shot middle of the green. I pull out this wood and I hit it inside of him. And we're walking up to the green and he's like, hey man, what club was that? Cause he's like, he probably didn't expect a guy pulling out a wood on a hole, right? And I'm like, oh, it's a 7-wood. He's like, excuse me? I'm like, yeah, 7-wood. And he was like, ah, man, I can't give you any crap for that cause you hit it inside of me. So, but like, that was cool though. Like, he was kind of like, man, you just hit a 7-wood on this par three. Kind of making fun of me, but at the same time, he couldn't.
No, you made Tiger Woods curious. That's a life goal of a lot of people, you know?
Yeah, so, it was such a cool day for me and a memory that I'll cherish forever. And it was, it really truly was one of fun days. And yeah, I mean, it was overall a very, very enjoyable, and he was so good to play with, really nice guy. And I think for me, like, even though Tiger was like this guy who we can all put on a pedestal, right? But like, I just treated him like another guy. And I think, you know, I'm speaking from my perspective, but I felt he enjoyed that a little bit, right? I didn't treat him like, oh, you're like Tiger Woods. Like, hey, you're just another my peer that who's happens to be amazing at golf. So we had a good time. Like, we talked quite a bit, and I had no idea how he was going to be, but I'm sure it helped that we weren't really in contention, right? So like, he was probably a little bit more relaxed.
Definitely.
And was willing to talk more. So, man, that was great. Yeah.
Very cool memory. Indeed. Love hearing those stories. Yeah. Again, this is Richard Lee joining us. It's Richard_LeePGA on Instagram. So you had the playing career on the PGA Tour. Now let's talk about the transition now. So I guess give me just a quick kind of 30-second answer on what was the transition time like for you deciding that you were going to go into coaching and leave playing in the past?
Yeah, you know, I decided to transition into coaching for multiple reasons. And if I'm being completely honest, like I had, right before I transitioned, I had 3 years of, after my injury, where I had surgery on my thumb, I struggled, you know, I had like conditional status, and I was, you know, doing a lot of Mondays, you know, spending a lot of money away from my family. And I just was kind of burnt out, you know. Not saying I completely gave up on competitive golf, but like it was time where I felt like I needed a break. And that's how I kind of decided to transition. And it's been a great transition because I'm still learning, right? I think the more we verbalize what we're trying to explain or helping players, it helps me as a player as well. But it's been a fun transition, working with different levels of players. Do I enjoy working with different certain types of skill level players? Yes. Does that mean I don't like teaching, you know, like beginners or what? No, like anyone that I work with that is willing to put in the work and understand that golf is hard, that there's no such thing as a quick fix, I enjoy that. You know, like, you know, if they can understand that and say, okay, this is a process, I'm all for it, you know? And, for me, yeah, I really have enjoyed just really dealing with people. You know, I look at golf as more of a holistic approach, not just a golf swing, not just a technique. There's so many other aspects of it that I try to get to know the person before I can help them as a golfer, if that makes sense. So I've enjoyed that.
Very cool. And so I saw Nick Taylor's a PGA Tour winner that I know had you consulted with him at some point. Who else are you working with that people might know, a pros on tour that you've been working with in your teaching?
So Nick and I do a lot of short game work still, and he was a teammate of mine, so I've known Nick forever. I also have been working with Stephanie Meadow on the LPGA Tour.
Okay, cool.
Andrew Yoon, who was on the PGA Tour, you know, he's working his way back. You know, I've helped Andrew Putnam with some short game stuff, who's a great friend of mine as well. And just a lot of mini tour players have, you know, talked to me or consulted with me or have some lessons with me in this area.
And I both know how deep that talent pool is. So there's always another one out there.
Yeah, there's a very fine line between, you know, a mini tour player and a tour player. You know, it's always a, you know, a lot of intangible stuff. But those are the, you know, kind of quote unquote bigger name players that people may recognize that I still work with. And I'm learning every day, and I'm trying to learn, and I try to approach it in a way, hey, you know, like, if I don't have an answer, I'll help you get the answer. And at the same time, like, I always tell people, like, don't do something just because I told you to do it. Understand the why behind it. And if you can, like, put that into your own feel or understand, right? Like, golf, everyone is so different in their aspect of learning and feel. So, and me being on the player, coming from a player's background, I can relate to that, right? So, I feel like that's kind of the approach I have with anyone that I work with, is like, hey, like, ultimately you're the one hitting the shot. And if anything doesn't make sense to me, to you, please like communicate that with me. Don't do something just because I told you to do it.
I appreciate that attitude. Yeah. Definitely. Let's get to some quick shots here for the last few minutes of our conversation with you, Richard Lee. Yeah. Let's talk about a couple of friends of the show as well that we've had on the Course of Life podcast, talking about one of my favorite couples in golf, Frederick Lindblom and Hannah Gregg as well. You did a little 2-on-2 match with them recently out in Arizona. I think they got the better of you at the end, but I want to know, yeah, is there a rematch in the works? And what's been the recent talk between you guys?
Fred and Hannah, they've been good friends, and you know, it's been nice getting to know them. And yes, they did get the best of me and Kyung, and I if I'm being honest, Kyung played great. I just didn't play very good.
Okay.
About my end. Fred played great that day. They got us. Yes, the rematch is definitely in the works. We're trying to, everyone has busy schedules, so it's hard to get everyone together at the same time, but it'll definitely happen. Just don't know when, and I'll be coming for blood next time. So I'll be ready.
Nice. I got one tip I want to get off you, because I know you post a lot of good stuff on your Instagram. You do some little backyard tips as well too that people can work on. One nice chipping technique that you showed for chipping specifically, I think, is great for amateurs. You demonstrated a great video on your Instagram of a little bit of a kind of like a pop chip that you hit from squishy lies in the rough, where you leaned really, really far forward on your left side. And it was interesting to see, but I want you to just kind of describe that shot for amateurs who really just struggle to get any sort of loft on chip shots and need to kind of manufacture that. Talk them through how that shot could work for them around the green.
Yeah. So the idea of that shot is when you're in like a kind of a scruffy lie or a thick, rough lie, like when you need to get the ball out soft. So like the reason why I'm angled my body so far to the left is that I want to slide that club underneath it, right, of the, you know, the ball. And I'm trying to create speed without trying to hit it too far, if
right.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
we need speed to get through the grass, but at the same time we don't want to hit something too far. So for me, it's a very handy shot because I'm trying to literally use my hands and wrists to kind of create the angle and the shot. So, but in order for me to do that properly, that's why my body is so angled. I call it creating angle with the body so that I can kind of neutralize the loft of the club. So it's kind of like a shot that's the shot that I actually learned from James Siegman, who's a great, great short game instructor that I used to work with when I was on tour. He calls it like the cock and pop shot. It's like you vertically hinge it, so you create that angle. And you just literally try to pop that club right underneath the ball, so it just kind of pops up and just rolls out. So it's not a shot that I will always play, but it's a shot that's nice to have when you're in a kind of a iffy situation, kind of short-sighted, thick rough. You need to just pop it out. It's a good way to do it. So create a lot of body angle, grip down to almost the shaft of the club. You're trying to minimize the length of the club too, so, you know, because you don't want to hit it too far. So that's kind of what that shot is created for. It's almost like a specialty shot, if that makes sense, you know.
I appreciate it. No, it was cool to see you manufacture the loft like that. Let's talk about where you are teaching now too. I love the Scottsdale area. I told you before, I've been the Valley area a few times now for trips, both for golf content, fun, and everything in between. You're at McDowell Mountain, which is not too far from TPC Scottsdale, right there in North Scottsdale. What can people look forward to when they head out to that course in the club where you're teaching at now?
Yeah, it's a very a fun public golf course. It gets a lot of play. But it's a kind of a desert course. I like to call it. They have a lot of character. You know, there's a mixture of easy holes. The par threes are pretty tough out there. But other than that, it's a pretty gettable golf course. Would I say it's a hard course? No, not really. But it's pretty a generous course. They could make it really hard if they put some pins on some dicey place, because a lot of the greens have some undulation to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a fun course. You know, if people are ever in Scottsdale area, it's a very good public golf course to play. And for, you know, as you know, golf in Scottsdale can get very expensive. And for the pricing of the, it's a little bit, let's just say it's a little bit more affordable than courses like TPC Scottsdale or Greyhawk.
Yes.
And it's a good little public course to play if you're ever out in this area.
Nice. And let's finish with our last question and talk about the 19th hole at McDowell Mountain. When you like to get in from a long day on the course or teaching as well, what is like your favorite meal and drink combination you love to have in the clubhouse?
Oh man. Well, not a huge alcohol drinker, so
that's okay. It can be anything.
For me, honestly, after a long day, I love nice, just Arnold Palmer ice water, or if I'm really feeling that, I mean, I probably shouldn't drink a lot of soda, but unfortunately that is my, my,
it's vice, one of your vices. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No yeah. problem. Yeah.
But like food wise, I mean, they have, you know, great sandwiches there. So, I would say a nice club sandwich and a nice Coke Zero will be my tired at the end of the day, hungry type of food that I'll enjoy.
Love that. Great 19th hole choice. And yeah, the Arnold Palmer, far and away the most popular non-alcohol beverage choice there on that question. So you're definitely with the majority there. Hey, Richard, I appreciate you taking the time to hop on the course of life. Again, looking forward to that rematch with Hannah and Fred, and of course your content on social media and your teaching as well, and hit them straight out there.
Hey, it was nice to meet you and thanks for having me, and hope to meet you one day.
Absolutely. I'll see you out in Arizona.
Sounds good. Thank you.
That interview with Richard Lee is brought to you by our friends at Groove It Golf, makers of the Groove It Golf Brush. You've seen it on the bag of tour caddies and your favorite athletes and golf personalities on social media, and it's the brush to get for the 2021 golf season. This brush's patented pump sprays water or cleaning solution right onto the club face for you, making it quick and efficient to clean clubs or even your golf ball in seconds. The Groove It Brush includes a detachable magnet so you can bring the brush to the club head, and the Groove It Brush comes with a 3-year bristle guarantee. That means if you can wear out the brush head cleaning golf clubs in 3 years, send it back and Groove It will get you a free replacement. So prepare to be amazed with the consistency and control that clean grooves will give you. Using your existing golf clubs with the Groove It, you'll get the spin, trajectory, and consistency you're looking for. So head on over to grooveitbrush.com to get your Groove It brush with free shipping in the U.S. Again, that's grooveitbrush.com to get your Groove It brush today. And we're back. Great interview there with Richard. It's always surprising to me, even though we talk about it a lot every week, just how difficult it is to earn status on tour with him needing to make 5 birdies in a row. And he did. I mean, I can barely, if I tell myself I got to make 5 bogeys in a row, that I can't go worse than bogey for 5 holes, it's like, forget it. I'm probably making triple on the first one. So
I think you and I could spend a month straight on the golf course without making 5 birdies, to be totally honest. But yes, unbelievable feat there. And I love that story of resiliency. And you're right. It's like a sliding doors moment where, like, you know, he could just as easily have, you know, made a couple bogeys. No one would have known a difference. He could have been playing on the Korn Ferry Tour for years to come and never gotten that shot at the PGA Tour, which got him to where he was. Instead, he has that unbelievable one run, gets the card, stays on tour, has the story, was with Tiger and playing years on the circuit. So you're right. It's a very thin line. We showcase it a lot here, but golf's one of those games where if you are in the top of the top, life is amazing. But for everyone else, it's pretty much a grind until you get there. So I loved hearing Richard's perspective. And again, check out his teachings and looking forward to that potential rematch against Hannah and Fred too. She sounds like it should be pretty competitive second time around.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And if you like that interview with Richard, plus everything else we do here on the Course of Life podcast, leave us a rating and subscribe on the podcast app of your choice. And if you leave a review too, it really helps other people find us. It really means a lot to us. We just want to say from the bottom of our hearts, thank you. If you're not going to do that and you think we suck, then, you know, Okay.
You get more and more genuine with those thoughts every time we talk about how we can get our people to podcast. I appreciate that, Mike.
Yeah. You know, honesty is important.
It is. Yeah. All right. Let's get honest with baseball real quick, because I've got some really hard truths off the bat for myself.
Do we have to right now? I mean, I know there's only been three games, but, you know, do we have to?
it's like, well, where do we want to start? I'll tell you one place that was nice to start. Opening day, we had snow baseball.
That was nice.
Not only for a moment, you know, we got the first home run of the season in the snow. Cabrera didn't even know it was a home run. He slid into second base and he had to be told it was a home run. I mean, that was a fun moment.
Keep going.
A little light snow to start the season.
It's cool. It's, you know,
after that, it's been horrible, though.
It's been pretty horrible. Nationals and Mets had COVID rear its ugly head right in the first opening series of baseball, too. So that happened. Yep. And then let's get over with my Yankees 1-2 to start the season. I mean, what I will say, I'm going to bring everybody down to earth for a second here. Seth Rothman said this on Twitter, our friend Seth. Okay. You're going to lose, even if you're going to win 60% of your games, you're going to lose 40% of your games. So it's okay.
I appreciate that little sixth grade math lesson there. Thank you. And there are 162 games. Try and tell that to the panic-stricken Boston Red Sox fan base right now. We got our asses swept by the Baltimore Orioles in convincing fashion, and it was ugly on Sunday to start the season.
The Yankees are planning to win 60% of the games. The Red Sox are hoping to win one game.
Correct. So, yes, the Red Sox still have not won as we tape this right now, going past Easter weekend without that. Very depressing. Starting pitcher that we paid dozens of millions of dollars for couldn't even get to the third inning on Sunday. So just absolutely getting lit up in every direction and not good times. Full on panic mode already. I know you love the Boston Sports Talk Radio report. It's full on panic mode already. We're already wiping the season away based off what we've seen three games in. So not good vibes for Red Sox Nation starting off.
What I will say is that I think it was the 98 Yankees, which turned into one of the best baseball teams of all time, started out as one of the worst. First weekend or so, they had a horrendous start and then turned it around. So, you know, you guys are no Yankees, but there's a chance that you can win two games.
That's good. All right. Well, that's good. At least we're not going to go 0-162. That's comforting.
There you go. You know what, though, is really sucking right now for both of us, in addition to baseball, is our March Madness brackets.
Yeah, mess from the start, really, for me.
Yeah, really was.
Started weekend one, and I mean, the only saving grace is like, I mean, you can say like, oh, great, I have Gonzaga in the championship game. Great, so does everybody else. It's like, there's just really not much to report there. It was a horrible bracket season for everyone. But shout out to everyone who did join the pool. We enjoyed having the company in there. Fun buzzer beater last Saturday night for the Zags. Mm-hmm. Doesn't get any more March Madness-y than that. That would be my highlight, at least. At least we got it. A little bit of influx with the underdogs.
Yeah. There you go. Let's hashtag always have the food.
That's right. It's brought to you by Toasty Bites and Toasty Snacks. Promo code COL20 for 20% off. Toasty.com/COL. Check them out today. A few different topics food-wise. Let's get into things not golf-related before we talk about this Masters Champions dinner menu. French fry debate, fierce one on Twitter. There were four different types of French fries. One of them had to go, Mike. It was classic shoestring fries. It was curly fries. It was crinkle fries. And it was waffle fries. Tell me who you eliminated.
Waffle.
Convincingly, too. You didn't even bat an eye at me.
No, I'm sorry. Well, I mean, the only place that makes good waffle fries is Chick-fil-A, and I don't go to Chick-fil-A anymore, so...
You took the words out of my wife's mouth right there. She's not a Chick-fil-A fan already. See, she already was out on that, and you're right. That's one of the main places you see them.
Yep.
I only said crinkle just because I think I had some bad experiences with like some undercooked crinkle fries from a vendor, and they don't have a good soft complexion if they're not cooked right and the right amount of crispiness. So I did throw away crinkle, but... I mean, I don't know. I could throw away curly as well, too. I was going back and forth on this all weekend. Very fierce topic on the internet.
Yeah, it'll always be a debate. The good news is none of them are actually leaving. You can enjoy whatever fried potato product you want.
That's great. What were you looking at food-wise this week?
I was making cake pops this week. you know, it was Easter weekend and I wanted to make something to bring into my team and my retail establishment because I hadn't baked anything in a while. So I made cake pops.
That is very nice of you. Look at you.
I know. Just I'm a nice guy. Don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
I'm a nice guy.
No,
nah, nice
I don't really believe it. But that's a shocking act of just unprovoked generosity by you. Nice work. How do they taste? I mean, how do they come out?
They tasted like a perfectly portioned ball of cake and frosting. Yeah, you know, it nothing fancy, you know, regular vanilla cake, regular buttercream frosting, nothing crazy going on, but it's just, it's a nice, sweet little escape.
It isn't once when you down like the whole piece of cake, like there's a certain amount of guilt associated with that. But the pop, it's like it's gone before it even starts. So like you barely even remember you had it. So I always appreciate that about a good cake pop. All right, let's get into the golf themed food issue this week. I'll give you a second to pull it up if you haven't already. I don't have it directly in front of me, but I know exactly how I feel about Dustin Johnson's Masters Champions dinner menu. This is an annual tradition. The Tuesday night before the Masters, the previous tournament's champion gets to select a menu of whatever they would like to serve to all of the past tournament champions.
And I'm digging this menu. I know you're not, but I'm digging this menu.
I like this menu. I'll let you read through it. My one comment as Mike, as you read through this is I want you to like picture all these foods and like what kind of event typically surrounds them. But go ahead and let everyone know what DJ's menu is.
Okay. So we're starting with pigs and blankets. Always, always good. I don't care who you are. Pigs and blankets are incredible. Yep. Always. Lobster and corn fritters.
Fancy. Like
little,
it.
A little more highbrow. Yep. Salad. House salad or a Caesar salad.
Fair. Right. Fair choice.
Family style sides of either mashed potatoes or spring vegetables. Okay. Your main is either filet mignon or a miso marinated sea bass. And your dessert is peach cobbler and apple pie with vanilla ice cream. Always a la mode. Always.
So I love everything that's there.
I know what you're going to say.
I would eat every single thing that is there. They're all
And I know what you're going to say about this menu.
But this is just
I know what you're going to say.
Dustin Johnson Champions Dinner menu. This is like just the most vanilla, like down the middle, play it safe menu. These are literally like the first choices you get when you're going to like the first wedding venue you look at. And like this is just the most basic event hall banquet food that you could possibly order up. The food will be fantastic because of where it's being cooked and who it's being cooked by. I wish I got a tiny bit more flair on the menu. That's all.
I mean, yes, this is a very plain, I guess you could say, nothing crazy going on menu. That doesn't mean it's going to be bad. I'm not looking down on this at all. And the fact that you look down on food, Alex, that just insults me. Like you would look down on this menu over your nose like some pompous rich guy thinking you know everything.
Here's what I would do. In typical meals, I would go light on the apps and I would build up to all the excitement for the entree and whatnot. What I would do instead is I would go heavy on the pigs and blanket and lobster corn fritters, knowing that I have, you know, just standard meat, fish, vegetables, salad ready to go. I know what that's going to taste like. I'm not going to need three plates of that. So I would go nuts on the appetizers here on Tuesday night, right next to Tiger at the Champions Dinner. That would be my game plan. But nonetheless, that's the Masters Champions Dinner. Final thoughts as we head into our Masters week here in 2021, Mike.
I'm looking forward to all the azaleas. I'm looking forward to see how many balls go in the water at Race Creek. And I'm looking forward to at least... do we know the over under on holes and ones this week? Do we have an over under?
It's typically 1.5. They always forecast for one. Or you can make a straight bet. Will there be a hole in one during the tournament as well too?
I'm gonna go for two.
That'd be fun. That'd be fun indeed. Looking forward to a fun Masters week. Thank you for everyone tuning in this week. We'll have another great episode coming for you next week from the Course of Life.